Alright, boys and girls, this is another UFC podcast, so if you tune in to get some insight into travelling, stop right here and download another episode, because this isn't the one. I'm here with Aaron A-Dubs.
Hello.
Are we in the right place? Because my understanding was if you go to a UFC event, you turn up an hour before and all the tables are gone. You can't get a drink, you can't go to the toilet, and it's pretty empty here. And right. We were at a UFC event last week, and it was like that, and now I've turned up on time an hour later, and we're sitting down, and there's no one here. What's going on?
It's the Connor effect. Last week was full of Irish people and Brits. It didn't help that the Anthony Joshua fight was on as well, probably at the same time.
Yeah.
We turned up, we had to stand for the whole 6 hours.
Yeah, listen to people cheering on Chris Weidman. Was the favourite. Damien Maia, he was another name that came up. And then at 3 hours before the end, when's Connor on? Mate, the main card just started. You are going to be waiting for a bit.
It was quite clear that not everyone knew what was going on and how big the event was. They were here just for the one fight. And it really annoyed me afterwards, actually, because I saw a lot of people on Facebook and Twitter saying, I can't believe I stayed out for that 13 seconds, or I can't believe I paid $50 for I was like,
yeah,
you didn't
not
pay
boxing.
You didn't pay for 13 seconds. You paid for two title fights. The one before that went four rounds. You paid for about 10 different fights, and they're quality fights as well. They're the top guys in probably each weight class.
You could even put Edgar and Saenz as a main event. That would be a fight night main event.
Faber
versus Saenz. Yeah. That'd be a fight night, Sacramento, whatever.
It was just weird listening to people say that. I think they got confused. It's like when they say about Ronda being like, I'm not paying for. So you're not paying for one person. You're paying for the event. Look at the other fighters. But it just makes me realise that the amount of people that are here just for Conor.
Yeah, that's the Conor effect. And you know, I owe Conor McGregor a lot. Because of him, there was a huge event, and I won a free T-shirt.
You did, yeah.
That absolute brain buster that he threw at me. And
which one? Oh, the two. Yours one was the two women's champions, aren't
yeah.
they?
Yeah.
But no, I don't think anyone else would have got that. Everyone else would have got. Some people would have said Ronda.
Serena Williams.
And some people wouldn't even know I'd say Johanna's name.
True, that was probably the hardest part of the question.
That's the bit I was judging you on. When you said it, I was like, you've done well there, because most people are probably looking at him thinking, alright, he knows his UFC.
Yeah.
So you can say her name.
Alright, so we'll pick up where we left off last week, and that's at the, well, Tony Ferguson match, I guess.
Yeah.
Exciting fight, I thought. Very impressive. As we'll get to later on, you know, he obviously wants to be in contention for the belt. I feel that he's not going to be able to. I feel he's going to have to take another fight or two before he gets there now. It's a pretty stacked division.
Yeah, and it's interesting because obviously they're probably out here in the background, they're watching the UFC, Fox Sports, Donald Cerrone, Rafael Dos Anjos. And it's interesting, it's less busy because if people really like Conor, this fight is obviously not as important as last week, but it has implications on Conor.
Is he going to be there to like
No, he's in Ireland, he's back in Ireland. Oh no, he's back in LA at the moment, just chilling, relaxing.
He's having some insane, and then his entrance music will burst on, and then it'll come out WWE style.
Oh, no contest. Oh, that's pretty
good. Yeah, Cole Miller, David Allaire's, iPoke, looks a bit. It's pretty rough.
Yeah. And this will start the other debate afterwards, what to do about iPokes, which happens every time there is an iPoke.
What can you do? I mean, people suggest that covering up the fingers or whatever, but like, if you look at his eye after, that is, it's pretty grim.
Yeah.
But yeah, the thing also you mentioned about this card as well, this is a fucking great card. The prelims are pretty decent as well, and it's a shame that none of the people who watched the UFC last week are thinking, oh, I might show up for this one, because
it's quite interesting, because Nate Diaz is saying he thinks this is a bigger card other than the two title fights last week. This card is actually,
I mean,
probably
a good fight straight away.
Yeah.
Lenz Castillo. Was it Castillo who missed weight yesterday?
They all miss weight.
Was there something wrong with the scale?
Well, it was. He got on the scale, Danny Castillo, and I think he was 158, and he's actually 155, and he was looking at it, being like, no, no, I'm not.
Yeah.
And then he got back on the scales again, and he was like, still overweight. And then apparently he went backstage and got another scale, and he was 156. So then after the weigh-in's finished, he came back out on the main, on the actual official scale, and weighed in at 156.
Okay.
So he was like, the scale must have been broken.
A few missed weight though, didn't they?
CB Dolloway came out and was 157, and then he took off his pants.
That's pretty light for a middleweight.
Was he middleweight? Oh, of course. No, he's 185, 18. Well, sorry, I'm thinking of that division. He was one.
Shoving pies down.
No, he was 187, and then he took off his pants, and then he was 185.5, and everyone started making jokes, being like, he's got the heaviest pair of box shorts ever. Even Nate Marquette was looking at him, being like, they're quite heavy, aren't they? And then there was Charles Oliveira, who came in at 150. Ooh.
But he's missed weight quite a lot.
Yeah, he's missed weight apparently three times. He was acting really surprised, being like, but then I was listening to Daniel Cormier and Brian Stann in the studio, and they were saying, you know, if you're that far overweight, like if it's 1 or 2 pounds, you might say there's a thing on the scales. He was 5.5 pounds over.
I saw the Castillo, and he genuinely looked surprised.
Yeah.
And I watched the highlights, saw Cole Miller and David Allaire going to the Star Wars Jedi sort of thing, which is funny, but obviously he's ended it all in tears now. But yeah, I did see Oliveira, but he's missed weight. I don't know if they're all at featherweight or whether they're somewhere at lightweight or what. But it's a shame because, I mean, he's really high level jiu-jitsu, and he could. Well, he's in the top 10, isn't he? But
yeah, he gave up.
Weight, they hate that.
He gave up his purse 20%. So I wonder now if he's going to be asked to go to. And it wasn't like he missed weight by a pound. It was like 5 pounds over.
I mean, almost they have to. Like they made Kelvin go up, and he missed weight officially. Wings only once or something. He missed it by quite a lot, and he'd had trouble before, but he'd always made it, I think.
Well, they were giving Johnny another chance. They said he was going to go up to middleweight. They're giving him one more chance at welterweight.
The thing is that you can't punish him for one fight. I mean, Kelvin doesn't matter so much because they gave him Marquardt, who isn't at his peak anymore, and so Kelvin didn't take too much damage. But each fight you take is. It's taking the life expectancy. Well, you know what I mean? It's taking added miles to the clock, is what I'm trying to say. So if you punish people by doing that, you know, it's just fighting. It can have a really big impact. So.
Yeah, I guess they're also thinking, if you're struggling to make the weight, from a health point of view, they're probably thinking, it seems like they're just being selfish, being like, you know, you can't make the weight, you're ruining the fight for us, so we're going to send you up. There's another side of it, which is, if you're struggling to make this weight so much, you can't keep putting your body through it. Johnny is an example of someone who has missed weight before, but then he made it again the hour later, and that was for a title fight.
Yeah.
He traditionally always struggles to.
Not sure about Nick Lentz's haircut, by the way.
Nick Lentz is the one who's writing the poems in that BJ Penn.
He went down to 145 for a bit, and now he's back at 55.
Danny Castillo could do with a win here. I think his last fight was against Tony Ferguson, wasn't it? That would have been at one of the events we watched.
He lost that.
Yeah, so he needs a win. Well, he might have lost his last two.
So he lost to Felder.
And then I think it was Tony Ferguson. I'm sure that was one we watched.
No, I watched Tony Ferguson a year. Like this was a year ago. I watched Ferguson. It was like 2014. It was the co-main of TJ versus Joe Soto.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Oh, then it was Paul Felder. It was Paul Felder. That was the one we watched then.
I mean, that's actually quite. I didn't watch. That was it when I was at home. Felder versus Castillo. But what's interesting, coming back full circle, is Tony Ferguson also fought in a weird way against Castillo, where he was happy to pull guard and roll him up and try different things, and Castillo was on top, and he thought he'd won, but they gave it to Ferguson for his being so active and proactive and doing all that stuff, so which is pretty much what he did last week. And it's difficult to train for someone like that. And Ryan Hall, who came on next, had Tony Ferguson not been on previously, I would have been like, oh well, this guy's so unique. But if you just turned on to the UFC for the first time, you'd be thinking, oh, it's everybody's fighting.
Everyone's just, yeah. I mean, yeah, well, that and was then, quite weird to have two guys in a row doing
and then
that.
And then you'd watch Frankie and Chad, and they're not doing that. You think, oh, these guys aren't very good, are they?
No.
But yeah.
Oh, he lost to Ferguson, Paul Felder, and then Jim Miller. He lost to Jim Miller in the Dillashaw Burrell rematch.
Okay.
By decision, split.
So he's on three in a row, is he?
He's lost three in a row, yeah.
So basically it's...
Although two of those are split decisions. I wasn't sure if that...
Luke Barnett had two split decisions and then got dominated by Mark Munoz and then went... Because he put out a tweet saying, I know it's three in a row, but two split decisions, please keep me in. And the next day, UFC releases Luke Barnett. So, I mean, the other thing is he's had a lot of fights as well. I think he's one of the highest sponsorship earners.
Danny Castillo?
Yeah.
Because the
WEC's combined.
It comes up,
yeah.
And what's quite interesting about this fight, it's not that interesting actually, but it's Team Alpha Male and they're on a bit of a bad run at the moment. Because they lost Lance Palmer.
Saw that.
He lost last night in WS.
Apparently, controversially.
Well, apparently, it was by decision. It was quite a close. There was one round, I think, as there usually always is. There's one round which people doing it. But then when I look at it, I thought, well, you had Paige as a main event. You had Mendes as a main event, and they both lost. If it wasn't for Faber last week,
yeah, who nearly lost?
It kind of started to gas as well, like. It's almost like gone again. It's almost feel like it's gone a little bit full circle. Team Alpha Male, because they brought in all these top guys, and then Faber kind of took the back seat, and now it suddenly feels like actually it's now Faber being the main guy again. Now that Dillashaw's left,
there was something I was going to say about Team Alpha Male, which I'll tell you after the podcast because I don't want to get sued by anyone.
Oh, okay.
But it's something. It's a reading between the lines kind of theory, and yeah, we want to. Point any call at anybody.
Oh, Joe Rogan does so.
Yeah, I think he says it in a way that's smart enough to know that he won't get in trouble. Like, he knows what he's saying. Because he said, and Brendan Shaw was done the same, that he said, he made a comment months ago saying that. The Brazilians haven't been doing too well since a new drug testing come in.
Zero,
and then he said, oh, I'm not saying they're on drugs, like, I'm just saying that. And it's like, well, you're just implying it.
Yeah.
Like, we know what you're saying. And
if he said Aldo's gym were like 0-8 or 1-7.
I've heard, or 2-9 or, yeah, something like that. But then, he was like, Rogan, I mean, I'm a big Rogan fan, but he said, and it's a valid point as well, he said about it could be that, or it could be the fact that he's done a lot of cardio.
Yeah.
But I think that's kind of like a disclaimer. It's like, oh, I'm also suggesting this as well.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you know, I won't go down that route. So that was Frankie, Chad, bit of surprise, didn't see that coming.
I think we both agreed as well that we thought if it was going to go to Edgar going to win on points, if anyone's going to win by knockout, it would be Mendes.
Yeah.
And he got caught. And then there's a lot of people now saying about it, whether or not that's the... Again, I don't want to say, I think it rolls around Connor, but everyone's saying, should he have taken longer off? Because Connor said it as well. Connor said in the press conference, Chad should have taken longer off. He got knocked out by me and then kind of went straight back into training. And he said, you don't do that when you get knocked out. And it's almost like, it looked like another precision punch. It didn't look like there was a lot of power behind it. It's like Edgar caught Mendes in the right spot, and Mendes just fell.
Yeah. What was weird, though, he kind of got back up like nothing had happened.
He took two shots on the floor, didn't he, and then he got back up.
Yeah.
But it's interesting, because, again, he took a lot of shots against Aldo and in the second fight, and he was fine.
Well, yeah.
Could have been doing cardio, though, so he could have been concentrating on cardio.
Yeah, well, exactly, yeah, and yeah. Maybe that is a possibility. Yeah, I mean, it was definitely a shock, but, I mean, fair play to Frankie. He's one of the best ever, if you think. He was an undersized lightweight, won the title and did all that. And I heard Florian say, that Benson's one of his closest mates, and he gave Frankie both of those decisions. And then some people gave it to him against Aldo as well. He lost three decisions, and then he's just been on a tear, beating some pretty good. He beat Oliveira, he beat BJ Penn,
Cobb Swanson,
Uriah Faber, and then Chad Mendes.
It'll be interesting because there is a part of me. So obviously with Conor winning, there's a part of me that thinks, do I want to see Conor Edgar straight? I want to see Conor Edgar. I don't know if I want to see it straight away. I wouldn't mind seeing. Oh, I would like to see Conor go up to lightweight because, you know, I've never seen that before, a dual champion, and I think he's kind of the money he brings in and the attention he brings to the sport. He probably does decide to, he can call some of the shots. Whether or not he deserves it is different.
The thing I'd say is that, so if he went up to lightweight and won, and then he came down and lost the featherweight to Frankie, it'd kind of be like, yeah, he was a dual champion, but he wasn't, because he didn't fight Frankie first. It kind of like throws a big question mark. I personally, because I've always said this, that, and it's, I'm not the only one, like I'd like to see Conor like face a grappler on a full camp and see if he can do it. I mean, you'd be stupid to bet against him.
The only reason I'd like to see him fight the lightweight champion first, because if he does it your way, which I agree is a valid point that he's got to defend the title. If he beats Edgar and is the featherweight champion,
it's
then
out
to lightweight,
it's,
and then it's almost like he may as well give up the lightweight title because he won't come back. He might as well clear out the give up the featherweight title because he won't come back down. Because there is no one else.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. Through like process elimination,
he wants to be able to say, I've got both titles at the same time, and I'm defending both titles. And to do that, he has to win the lightweight and then go and defend the featherweight. If he defends the featherweight first, there's nothing left for Edgar's the last fight for him.
Yeah,
and I'd also be a little bit annoyed about the featherweight division, because I know it happens in sport, and you've got like the lightweight with John Jones. But if he does beat Edgar and then gives up the title, that featherweight division then kind of just goes into a little bit of until it kind of evolves and some new people come on there, maybe the likes of like Miles Jury, who's fighting tonight. But I look at the division, I think, well, Conor's just beat them all, and then it's like, oh, now it's just, and Conor's still active. It's just like, oh, he's beat them all, gave up the title.
Yeah, it does put a mockery on the division a bit.
Because I'm not sure if they've ever had that before, where someone has cleared a division and then given up the title and moved up. You've had people lose the title and then move weight divisions.
Well, people are always reluctant to go up when they are so dominant in the division. Like, they've been talking about Aldo going up for years, he didn't bother. And they said it about Barao, apparently he's doing it. GSP and Anderson Silva never happened, that's a bigger a gap. But yeah, people are reluctant to. Oh, that is nice.
No, I get what you mean. They're obviously going to fight. There's no doubt about that. And even if you said Edgar's got another fight in between, by the way Edgar's going, he's going to revision. But I don't think he will. Give him. The thing about Conor is the way he trains is that he doesn't seem to. I know he had that knee injury, but he doesn't seem to. He's the kind of guy I think that could fight four times in a year.
He said that if it was up to him, he'd be fighting these featherweights every week and want to clear out the division in 4 months, but he has to do all this promo stuff.
Because he did offer to fight at the Island fight. He almost feels like getting fighting is like training. It's like a intense training session. He doesn't seem to get hurt much in his fights. Even against Mendes, he got that cut. But afterwards, and he was being taken down,
What made me laugh was the medical suspensions. Jose Aldo, like, for 30 days. Conor McGregor, 6 months.
They always do. I mean, he'll be cleared before then, won't he?
Yeah, it was funny. It's like, how do you do that? How do they come up with those numbers? It doesn't really make any sense.
Well, I tried to find out why. I remember asking. I think I either Googled it, and I think I might have asked a brother once. It's because like they say what injuries they've got afterwards, before they're even properly checked out. So Connor's like, I've injured my left hand, and doctors are saying, oh, it might be broken, and then somebody just put down, might be broken, 6 months.
It's pretty much a waste of time printing those numbers. It doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
Alright,
I agree that Edgar's next, and I don't agree that Aldo deserves, well, doesn't deserve, that's the wrong thing. I don't think Aldo should get an automatic, not that he shouldn't get an automatic rematch, I just don't think there's going to be a time frame. I do think he's going to have to take a few months off.
Yeah, obviously the head trauma thing and not a doctor, but yeah, he needs to take time off, because it doesn't do you good to get hit in the head that many times. Manny Pacquiao took a year off after being knocked out cold by Marquez. In theory, he does deserve a rematch just based on history and the fact he's been so dominant. The thing is, as a fan, for me, I kind of see it as a bit of a waste of a fight in such, because, you know, I don't think it would go 13, well, maybe it would go 8 seconds this time. But yeah, I don't think that it's going to be, Conor will be such a heavy favourite. It's just, I'm more intrigued by the Edgar match, and how long can you wait, make him wait now? He's beaten 5 high quality people. Like, how long are we going to make this boy wait?
I think they'll give it to Edgar next. And actually, one thing I would say about the rematch is that people forget this in that fight, and maybe I was looking back on it, maybe it's because he is so tall and his reach is so long, but Aldo did catch Conor coming in. Now, I'm not saying he caught him and Conor was about to go down, but he caught him with a good left.
Yeah. It certainly had its zing taken out of it by the fact that he was pretty much out cold by the time it had connected.
Yeah. But I mean, he showed, in those 13 seconds, he showed that he could connect.
But that's the thing, okay, so another example of that was Rashard Evans versus Chuck Liddell, which is going years back. You ever seen that knockout? And same thing, like, they both throw, but Rashard's the one that lands, and you got Liddell of his power, it's like if he lands, but he was he was past his peak.
Yeah.
And one of the best podcasts I can recommend to listen to if you're an MMA fan was a Joe Rogan Experience episode with a guy called Nick Kersen. Have you heard of it? So Nick Kersen's, he's pretty much Dos Anjos's strength and conditioning coach, and he's what's described as a disciple of the Marenoviches. Now, the Marenoviches are big in the sport and the strength and conditioning industry, and they were BJ Penn's strength and conditioning coaches when BJ Penn was BJ Penn. And apparently before the first Frankie fight, BJ just 4 weeks out said, I just can't do it anymore, it's working but it's too much for me, I can't train like this. And then so he got rid of him and then lost the fight. But when he was beating everybody at lightweight, it was because of the Marenoviches got him into the best shape. And Nick Kersen's one of their disciples, and he was on Rogan talking about everything he does with people and the way they train. And the way they described it is, if you watch Pettis versus Dos Anjos again, he said there's not much difference between the ability. The difference is that Dos Anjos was in peak physical condition, and so when they threw, he was just that much quicker.
Yeah.
And the timing was just spot on. And I think there was something going on with Conor. I think they knew that was he was willing to take a hit because he knew he could throw that thing, and throw his left before Aldo could land that hook. So it took a hit, but he knew. I think it was all timed, it was all perfect, it wasn't hope, it was all...
Do you find it weird that you've got all these predictions, that you got that interview with Conor beforehand where he was saying,
no,
he's going to overextend, because he did overextend.
Okay, do you know what, they're not predictions, they're him setting out goals and achieving them. Like, the big thing about Conor is, for me, the biggest thing I can take away from it, and I find it really inspiring, is just how prepared he is for everything he does, and how there's no stone left unturned. I heard him say on The Fighter and the Kid, he said, because I work hard, and every decision I get up and every decision I make is towards me winning that title. He said the rest of these guys, they think they're working hard, but they're not. So I'm working hard. And he's that driven, he's that successful that he just covers absolutely every base. He's thinking, how can I, him and his team are thinking, how can I perform the best? How can I make things better? How can I beat this guy? Where are his weaknesses? And he's planning it all out, which gives him the confidence. And so when he says this stuff, it's not a coincidence in prediction. I think he's saying, right, next year I want to be the highest grossest earner, so I'll talk a little bit more trash, draw and go big. As soon as like, he beat Chad and they made that big Aldo promo and that, I think with that straight left, they'd watched that tape loads of times, they drilled it thousands of times. Like, it's 13 seconds, but he said this is a lifetime's work. And I bet they drilled that punch. I don't even want to think about
it. Yeah, yeah, so that's what I'm saying. Like, he must, that's him preparing for the fact that he knew the way Aldo comes in. And yeah, maybe it works against people who are his size and his... But Conor being a lot taller and having that longer reach meant that he could... meant that Aldo had to overextend. Maybe it was just tactical. Maybe it wasn't a prediction. Maybe it was just... What I'm going to say is just that he got that... I felt like he got that exact... Because he could have ended it another way. He could have ended it with a straight left. But he ended it by the way he was saying it.
Like, he just drilled... I just think they... I bet they spent days on that punch. Literally days. So I think he's just so well prepared that...
Aldo coming in?
Yeah.
And maybe it's what you said about with the Los Angeles stick. Maybe it was just because he's so prepared. He saw it coming and was just so quick.
Yeah.
He managed to...
I mean... Yeah, I was just... the thing I take away is just how prepared he is and how everything's just... It's just... he just covers all bases. And that's the thing about Frankie. Like I said before, yeah, I want to see Conor fight a wrestler. But you've got to be crazy if you don't think Conor's going to be bringing in wrestlers from Dagestan or whoever and preparing that and drilling and watching all of Frankie's tapes and drilling that takedown defence. Now, whether he'll be able to practice it good enough, I don't know, but he's going to be doing that. He's going to be absolutely solidly prepared. However, I will say, sort of taking a step back about things, I thought these guys were all really well prepared and all that, and Aldo just fell into just a trap straight away. That's really, for a world champion, that's really shocking preparation, the fact that they just, that Conor's big weapon is his left hand. It's not an unknown fact, despite the fact that last week I called it his right hand, but you know, it's his left hand is his big weapon.
Yeah.
And they just walked straight into it in 13 seconds. I mean, that's ridiculous. That's poor preparation. This is a champion of 10 years, and he just walked straight into it.
Do you think he just... There's a part of me that kind of thought, do you just think he wanted to get out? He didn't want to be in there? There's parts when I looked at Aldo. Because when I saw Aldo at the weigh-ins, I was thinking to myself, forget about how Conor looked, because as Conor said, he always looks shit at weigh-ins.
Yeah.
Aldo looked relaxed. He started doing the Conor pose.
Yeah. But then I thought he had some mad... I thought he was going to try and grapple him. I thought he's confident here. He's got to know something that we don't.
But then when he was walking down to the octagon, when he was in... I know he does it a lot where he doesn't look up. He just looked like he didn't want to be there. Like, he normally runs down to the octagon to Rihanna's Run This World. And yeah, he was like jogging down. But it just didn't look like he wasn't away.
It didn't look good.
He didn't look like he wanted to be there. He didn't look relaxed. And apparently, like, Dana was saying that... Or Joe Rogan, it was Dana was saying Conor was just when he was coming down, Conor was just walking around and talking to people outside the octagon. So when he was waiting in the waiting for Aldo to come down, he was just walking around talking to people. He just seemed so relaxed, like it was just like just at training. Basically, I'm just talking to John Kavanagh, I'm talking to people in the front row. And then when Aldo came down, he just looked. I just felt like he didn't want to be there. Like he wanted to be back in, and then it takes back to. I think Chael Sonnen saying he doesn't want to be there.
And they both want to lose or whatever. They both think they're going to lose.
Yeah, and it made, when Chael Sonnen was saying stuff like, until Aldo weighs in, I still think he doesn't want to be here. Like, it seems like he just wants to be back home in Brazil. And I just thought that was just Chael Sonnen trying to make himself relevant again, and that, you know, he kind of drifts away when he's not a headline, and he comes up with sometimes true but sometimes ridiculous statements.
Outlandish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then I just thought, yeah, I mean, that's what I looked at. When I looked at Aldo, I just thought he didn't look like he was happy to be there. He didn't look like, I'm looking forward to this fight. Maybe it's because a few of his last fights have been in Brazil as well, where he feels at home. I know the Mendes fight was in Brazil. Was the Edgar fight, was that in Brazil? The Franco, I'm not sure what that one was, but yeah, there was something off about Aldo.
Yeah, it didn't look good, did it? I don't know. It's the thing, I said it last week, it's hard to know what's going on about Aldo because he just doesn't speak English. So you're left with little to go off. So you don't. It's too much to speculate, I think. But it's not beyond the wildest possibilities that he was nervous.
There was that issue, wasn't there, about him not speaking English, because he said something after with Joe Rogan in the interview, and Joe Rogan asked him a question and he answered it for his translator, and Joe Rogan didn't like the answer and said, well, he says something like it wasn't really a fight, and then Joe Rogan said, well, actually, mate, it was a fight, just that it was 13 seconds. And then Joe Rogan apologised for saying that because a load of people tweeted in saying that's not what Aldo said. I think he got lost by the translator. What he actually said was it was a fight, but he would like to go again. Rogan just apologised, because the way Rogan said it back was just like, well, actually, mate, it was a fight. It was only 13 seconds.
Yeah, it was a weird one, because I took two things away from that fight. The first one being, like I said before, just about how well prepared Conor is, and that. I think every base is absolutely covered. He's really well prepared. So, and it just showed that Aldo just walks right into his traps. That's the first thing I took away. And the second thing I took away was that I always thought that this, like Conor, I thought he was very powerful, but he always said, like, these featherweights don't understand when they get hit by me. It's a different ball game. And then when he did that, I thought, okay, yeah, it is a different ball game. And I think anybody at 145 and 155 would be fucking stupid to try and stand with him. It's pretty bit of a war going on with Nick Lentz here. I just think that when you fight him, he's proven it time and time again, he can knock people out. So if you're a stand-up specialist, you might want to be thinking of trying some other approach, just because you got to leave your ego at the door. Like he's a good chance of him knocking you out. And I think that's, if he fought Cerrone, I think Cerrone would obviously stand with him, and I think that Conor would eventually knock him out if he stood with each other. He's going to find a way.
It's quite interesting actually, because when I was looking at the Aldo preparation, it just made me... It's completely different. I know it's completely different, but losing a title in 13 seconds, you kind of look at it and you think, oh, wow, like... And we're talking about how Aldo just didn't look prepared, just didn't look ready. I don't know, I just think, like, it was only the event before, the pay-per-view before, where it was 193, where you had another champion, a dominant champion in Ronda Rousey, who, again, just looked very amateurish and looked like she shouldn't have even been in there with Holly Holm.
Yeah.
And then you've got other champions who dominate, and maybe it's just the case of the sports evolving. You had Anderson Silva. I thought Anderson Silva looked unbeatable, and I mean there was a Chael Sonnen fight where in the last round, but then when he fought Chris Weidman the first round, he looked like he was being beaten. And then you got Barao, who I thought was unbeaten in like 10 years, and then came against TJ. And
yeah, who we knew was Barao fighting though, that's the thing, because Dominic Cruz was the man in that division.
So it's quite interesting when I see some of these champions, but the Ronda one stood out to me because I just thought this is two events in a row, it just looks like the champion looks amateurish, like they shouldn't even be in there.
It's funny you said that, because I don't know if I mentioned this to you before in one of our other conversations, because this is pretty much what we do. This is a conversation that we pretty much have anyway, just as a microphone in our face. But one of the other things that I said to you is that Rogan has said on a recent podcast that he's known world champions who just break, and he said he was talking about people's breaking point, and he says some people break under pressure, and he said he's even known world champions in UFC who, as soon as a little bit of pressure comes, they broke. And I thought, who on earth is he talking about then? Like, I started thinking, who's he? And then I thought, you know, maybe he's talking about Hendricks. And this is me speculating in my mind, because the way he sort of broke in the last couple of rounds against people, and I thought, and I think that's where it stopped, and I started thinking about something else. But then with you saying that, you've had two champions who everybody thought was the dominant champions, and they've just been, like you said, been looked amateurish. So maybe it's them two you're speaking about.
Oh. It's interesting because another split decision.
30-27.
I mean, I don't know. Just listen to this. That's now, I think, his last 5 in 7 defeats, Danny Castillo. 4 of them are split decisions. One of them is a knockout.
I mean, that was the thing that's gone with him. That was quite an entertaining fight. So I think it depends who you're losing to and how you're losing. If it's good fights and you've got a name.
If it's a split decision, it's almost like you might as well just keep him in there because he's still proven a test for a lot of the people. Like Nick Lentz just came back down or went back up, sorry, to 155. So it's almost like, oh, here's your first fight, Danny Castillo, just sticking like it's almost like a gatekeeper for everyone. Like, well, I always say like the Marcus Brimage was like the opening guy for a lot of people in weight classes.
Or another one, but since he's come back to the UFC, Berkman has lost 4 in a row or something, or 3 in a row.
Yeah.
But it was to Cote, Hector Lombard, and Dong Young Kim, I think. So it wasn't as if he got blown away. He was competitive and threw a challenge. And Rogan said, "Well, I'd keep him around. Like he's a name that people know. He's fighting good people. He's not getting blown away. And like he is a gatekeeper."
Yeah.
And he's been around the top echelons of that division for a long time.
But yeah, going back to the championship thing with the Aldo and Ronda, it's quite interesting when you say that people break him, because for me, I feel like Connor could have had an impact on Aldo breaking, like just getting in his head, whereas I think with Ronda, she almost just broke herself. Maybe she put too much pressure, maybe it was family, but Holly Holm didn't talk any trash to her. Yeah. Holly Holm did literally nothing, just sat there in silence and was like,
yeah.
And then we said, when we went to see the weigh-ins, it was Ronda the one who was storming over there. Holly, even afterwards, when Rogan puts the microphone in front of him after the weigh-in, Holly was like, I was just having a drink.
Yeah.
And then Ronda puts, whether or not she puts so much pressure on herself, maybe it's a family thing, maybe it's, you know, the pressure now, she's dating Travis Brown, everyone was talking about that's come out. I don't know what it was, but something happens and she...
I don't think it's one thing.
Well, yeah, it could be, it's probably all of those things.
If all those things have been happening and she was fighting Betch Gahea, no disrespect, but I still think she would have won.
Yeah.
Whereas the fact that it all happened and she was fighting someone out of Jackson Winklejohn who's really, really good, so I think it was a combination.
It's one of those things where I think you've either got an opponent and get in your head and make you do that, but like I said, for that fight, Holly just sat there and literally probably said nothing. Yeah. And then Ronda was like at the weigh-in just going crazy, and it's almost like maybe that was, and she just looked quite amateurish. Josh Salmon,
my mate, tagged Tandon McCrory in a post today, so I don't know if he knows him or not. Facebook friends.
Do you know Josh Salmon is the he was tough, wasn't he?
Seems his girlfriend died in a car crash on the phone to him or something like that.
Last time I saw him fight, he beat the other tough guy, Weidman's mate, Truck. The one Eddie Gordon. Was it a spinning back kick or spinning back fist, knocked him out. And that was Eddie Gordon's last fight with the UFC. So he lasted, I think he went down to welterweight, got himself an amazing, Johnny Hendricks, his new guy. So do you remember Eddie Gordon from...
He's been released,
but he was a 185 and he didn't look ripped, he just looked like a big strong guy. And then
he said he was going to drop down division, he got released, didn't he?
He had one fight, I think, at welterweight, so he dropped down to welterweight, and he used Johnny Hendricks, the guy Johnny Hendricks is using now.
Right.
And actually, I follow Eddie Coyle on Instagram, and the way his body looks...
Has he liked any of your photos?
Yeah, like, he got himself in really good shape, and he obviously just changed his lifestyle when he was like... Before, he was like 200-odd pounds, cutting down to 185, and he just obviously changed the way he was more ripped. He had this... 6-pack and packs out, and then obviously it didn't work because he lost his fight and he got cut. But that's who Johnny Hendricks now put in. Apparently Johnny Hendricks walking around like 191 now.
Is he? Well, someone else who's walking down lighter, Chris Weidman.
Yeah.
And it also, I'm kind of annoyed at myself for that one, because I said to you about Connor and Weidman. I said, for me right now, I don't want to call him the best, because there's a few asterisks behind him. And don't get me wrong, like, Vitor would kick my ass, and so would Anderson Silva, and so would Machida.
Vitor, I reckon I could give a good fight to.
but like, there's always, almost unfairly, but he's fighting people who are over the hill or past their peak, and he's fighting them at a convenient time. And I kept on hearing people say, no, he's like really good, honestly, he's a different breed of human being, he's a monster, he's going to be the best ever. And I started to believe it, and then as soon as he fights someone who's like his equal, his match, he then falls short straight away.
Well, I told you about my brother absolutely loved Chris Weidman.
Yeah.
I didn't really know about Chris Weidman. What I really knew about him is that he beat Munez with that elbow. Munez walked into that elbow and then he...
Right.
But my brother was saying he will beat Anderson Silva.
Yeah.
And he did, and my brother was a huge fan of him. And my brother was the kind of guy I followed about UFC because he was watching it for like 3 or 4 years before me.
Yeah.
But what's interesting is you talked about the guys he beat, and I don't really look too much into the Vitor thing because we know what Vitor is.
It was just a waste of time. It was a waste of my time because we had to wait for a year to fight someone who... The guy who fought was not the guy who won the title.
Yeah.
So that's...
But the Machida one was quite interesting because Machida didn't... He beat Machida, but it wasn't like an easy fight for him. It went five rounds. And one of the rounds he looked... He took a few shots and it looked like Machida... was going to won that round. When Rockhold, and I know it was like another 7 months later, when Rockhold fought Machida, he just absolutely dominated him and finished him, or submitted him. And I just thought, and that's what Rockhold kept saying, like, look at our performances against Machida. Oh, I know they're 7 months apart and Machida might have taken damage from that fight, but look at the way we dealt with the same guy.
Yeah.
I mean
MMA mass is not a great thing, because that means like Frankie could go, oh, I beat Chad in one round, so
yeah,
I'm twice as good as Conor.
Conor, yeah, I get that.
And Chad trained more, so I'm therefore four times as good as Conor.
No, I get that.
But that's two extreme examples. It's five rounds versus a 1.5 round mauling. So yeah, I know what you mean.
But that's what Carl's selling point was. Like this guy, he was saying exactly the same thing. This guy has been struggling against guys who are kind of over the hill. And to be honest, that first round was close. Weidman took Rockhold back straight away. The second round was close. I think Rockhold was more in it, but Rockhold, which I didn't realise till afterwards, had staph, I think, or was on antibiotics or something.
So he was on antibiotics for, I think it was 2 weeks before it or something, and he came off him on Monday fight week.
I thought he came off him on Thursday.
Well, then Tuesday, so he came off on a Monday on fight week. Tuesday, after training, his ankle started swelling up, so had to go late night, get a prescription, get back on him. And then he had to come off them on Thursday because of to cut weight. And then once he made weight, then start on him again, which is not a good idea when you can't, because the infection, Dr. Tiago speaking again, but the infection sort of grows resilient to the medicine you're giving it if you don't finish a full course. If you start spacing out the times, it's not particularly smart. And then he did all that and still beat him. The one thing I thought, I mean, this is not groundbreaking MMA breakdown, but I mean, that spinning kick, I think I could have done as good of a spinning kick. And I thought, what on earth is, why would he do that? And everyone said that, and everyone makes mistakes. But the one thing I kept hearing is, oh, Wyman's different breed, doesn't make mistakes. His one first big challenge, he makes, I don't know, it's a mistake, or did he crack under the pressure and trying to throw that? I mean, what was he doing?
It wasn't like, do you know what, as well, it wasn't like there was like 10 seconds left in the round that he was just trying to score a... It was a lazy kick, but when I look back on it, I thought maybe he was just trying to score some points and trying to do something, but it was so poor, like, and he cost it because there was still like 1.5 minutes in the round to go.
Yeah, like I said, that was just a turning point. I am joking when I say maybe I could have done a better one, but I'm not. It's not that far off.
No,
it's not, it just sort of tapped him, and it's not something you've seen from him before. I just thought it was really poor, and I think Ray Longo said the worst thing you can get after something like this is you get people in the pub telling all along and commenting on Chris Weidman, and sorry, because that's what we're doing. But it's it's a valid point, because we kept getting told he was the next big thing and the first big fight.
But I probably had that fight at one round each going into the third.
See, I thought right, Wyman was starting to take control, because I thought Luke looked knackered, which obviously we know why now.
Well, I had Wyman winning the first and Rockhard, I think, winning the second.
Agreed.
And then I think I had Wideman winning the third.
Agreed.
For the first 2.5 minutes or so, and then he just threw. And I wonder, there's part of me that wonders whether or not he saw Luke gassing and he thought, actually, I could probably throw this kick and knock him off. But he also looked like that kick looked like a lazy kick of someone who was absolutely shattered, who'd just done like an hour in the gym and his eyes. And then, I mean, the fight, and this is my only criticism, I don't like to criticise referees, it's a difficult job. That fight should have been stopped in that third round.
Yeah.
I think you can give the champion a benefit of a doubt, and say, oh yeah, he was given a champion. There was 10, there was 15 seconds left. He was given a championship, the benefit of the doubt. But actually, when I think about health and the safety of the fighters, he allowed someone who got beaten up to then come out for another round and get beaten up again. Like, how much damage he took in the end of that third round. And then Herb Dean kind of said, let's let him come out and take a little bit more. To be fair, he jumped straight in when Rockhold was hitting him in the fourth. He didn't let him take too much damage there. He jumped in and thought, this is... But I agree with Javier... Is it Javier Mendez? That fight should have been stopped in the third. For Weidman's safety, if anything. Like, he got battered. There's a part of me that thought... I bet Wyman probably thought, I wish it was stopped, because I had to come out to the third and then take another fourth, sorry, and then get another.
I don't think he's that kind of guy. I think he'd get out on his shield.
When you say that, but yeah, I mean, I don't think he would have stopped on the stool, but there's a part of me that thinks, I wish he probably thought, actually, if the referee had stopped it in the thirds, he's out, because he's not going to quit on a stool. So he then came out for a fourth round after that beating.
Yeah.
And then took. And then got taken down again.
I don't know, the thing you got to realise is these guys are a different. They don't think like that. They're a different breed.
It was cut. He was.
Yeah,
bruised,
but they
couldn't see. And
but they still. I bet he still thought he was going to win. Do you know what I
mean? No, I think at that point he had broken. That's from that when he got beaten that bad.
An injury I heard was an interesting one. I heard Sugar Shane Mosley speaking, and this was recently, and he was saying like how he thought he was the best in the world and how he thought he had beaten both Pacquiao and Mayweather in that fight and stuff like that, and he genuinely believed everything he was saying. And I'm not a boxing expert, but I do know that he's not been at he's past his peak. He lost to both of them, but he wasn't like lying, it wasn't bravado, it was like, no, I believe all this. And I think fighters are just a different type of person, and I don't think he thinks smartly in those situations. I just think, I don't know, he lost either way.
And to be fair, he didn't. They stopped him from taking too much damage in the fourth.
Interestingly, I heard Luke say, because he was on the fight with a kid, and he was saying
this
that
week.
They did a special episode yesterday.
I'll have a little listen to that one.
Just 30-minute one. He was saying that their plan was to finish him in three, because after that they were going to be really struggling. So he was saying how he's beating him up at the end of the third and thinking, fucking hell, please stop this, because if I have to come out for fourth.
So he was on. Oh, he was. They were doing a whole thing for him yesterday, weren't they, in LA, for Rockhold and bringing the title back.
Okay.
But I tell you what. Even though we're talking about the rematches, I because of that middleweight division, I would much rather see a Wyman Rockhold 2 than Romero. And it goes against everything we say about rematches and that, but
yeah.
I just think you could sell that fight again, because it was until that.
It was close.
Yeah,
and then the spinning kick and the infection, it's like, let's see the real Wyman versus Rockhold.
Because there's an argument to say, all right, if. People could say, oh yeah, you can say if he didn't throw a spinning back kick, but you can say about everything. You can say if someone didn't do this, they might have.
Yeah.
But maybe Rockhold finishes Wyman in a round without the infection, and then suddenly you think, actually, Wyman wasn't a legit champ. Maybe Rockhold is the real deal. I just don't think you can give it to. I know Romero beat Jacare. I just don't think you can give it to either of those two. That fight to me could have just been a draw, or should have just been a draw.
I think you made them both rematch. Put them as a co-main event in something.
I think you have to do one of those as like a main event on Fox. I don't
do
think
that,
so, yeah
do
I but
I think there's too much just talk about asterisks all the time. There's too much on Romero. Like, the Kennedy one, for me, he's lost. They cheated. They didn't get on the stool deliberately. They didn't make the bell. Like, he's lost. He's lost that.
That's well, he still wants to fight, doesn't he, Tim Kennedy? He's now just sitting there. Didn't Rockhold say Tim Kennedy was his toughest fight?
The other way around, Tim Kennedy said Rockhold was his toughest
fight. No, no. Oh, no, that was it, sorry. Rockhold said Kennedy and Jacare were his toughest fights. And everything else.
Well, Kennedy said the way around. He also put on Twitter, like, gay Jesus obviously likes cheats. But yeah, for me, he cheated against that, and then fair play against Machida, who'd been battered by Ruffold. He did well.
Came
against
back
him.
Way too early for that fight.
But then that second round, he obviously had him on the ground, and then. In the tournament, like, Jacare showed if he was getting him down, how smart he was. If you watch, he stays in half guard to make sure he doesn't get turned over, because Romero is such a powerhouse. And I just think that grabbing the fence for that long has to be a point. It's not just a little grab to stay up. It's like a no, don't take me down, no. And then you either got to score it as a takedown for Jacare, or you got to take a point off Romero. And then Jacare dominated in the third round. So he was lucky to get a decision, and he cheated. And he cheated and won two fights before, and he gasses after a round. Like,
well, yeah, I mean, I don't think he'll do well against someone like Rockhold, because. Or even a Weidman, because I just think they can go for five rounds, and he just looks shit after halfway through the second round. And he tries, like, even at the end of a round, he almost tries to just buy an extra 10-15 seconds. He even tries to do it in this one. I'm not sure something happened at the end of the first round where he looked like he was trying to buy an extra. Oh, it was the whole water thing. They keep pouring water on him. His corner keep pouring water over his head, even though they're told not to, so they have to come and wipe the floor. It's almost like he's just always trying to buy an extra.
I tell you what, though, I think he's got responsibility to Mankind, though, because he should just tell us what his nutrition plan is, because to look that good at 38, you know, that we all want to look like that at 38, so he should just tell us what he's doing and we'd all be happy. Anyway.
Well, what's interesting is you don't really hear it about... I hear, and again, not trying to get in on each other, I'm not going to say names, but you hear a lot of people say... This fighter is probably using, or this fighter looks like they might be using, or they look different. You don't hear it. I don't hear it enough about enough. I don't hear it that much about Yoel Romero. He may well just be a freak athlete.
Well, he's obviously that. I mean, doing a round off backflip at 185 pounds, like, or whatever, 200 pounds probably at the time, a day after you've dehydrated yourself and you're about to fight. The third number three ranked guy in the world. That's pretty. It's pretty good going.
I also think that middleweight division needs to freshen up now, because I think we're talking about those two rematches. If it was you've only really got those top four. I'm just trying to think who else. It'd be nice. I quite like Tim Kennedy. I think he's quite a funny guy, and he's quite getting him back in the mix.
He's a national American national hero. Everything he's done. Like, they need to get him a fight. If he wants to do it,
but he said he wants to do it, but he also doesn't make himself popular to the organizer, because he just slates the
real. He's got his own business. He says what he wants, and you got to remember that this is like a hobby for him, really. Like, do you think he's been to war and been shot out and whatever, kill people, but in his important missions? Do you really think he gives two hoots about fighting in a cage? It's just like a little bit of a hobby for him. Like, he's got other stuff going on. He doesn't need the UFC, and fair play to him. But that's what they should be doing. They should rematch them two. They should put him against someone, and then hopefully he wins. Then come and then maybe give the winner of Jacare Romero that. Put Tim Kennedy against someone else.
I'm trying to think who else then, there is. I mean, Tim Kennedy.
Whittaker or someone. I don't know.
Vitor, but he wants Vitor Belfort, doesn't he? Tim Kennedy.
Yeah.
He said he'd love to fight.
So does Rockhold.
Yeah. But I agree. I understand why Rockhold wants that, because I think if there was the TRT, but there was TRT being used, if there was, he kind of wants to, a lot of people say they want to avenge the feats, and I understand them saying, well, no, because Vitor doesn't deserve to be in that spot, but for Rockhold, he's probably thinking, I just want to avenge that defeat, I want
to beat his face.
Yeah, I just want to make sure that he knows that victory against me, it was a fluke, and I'm going to batter him next time we fight. And I think he would.
Yeah.
It'd be quite interesting because you've got two camps at the moment that I think that have been around for years. They're probably the two most famous camps I've known in UFC, which is AKA and Jackson Wink. And arguably they're very close to taking a lot of titles. And they could well be facing each other. You've got DC in one and John Jones in the other. You've got Cerrone in one and Khabib in the other. If Cerrone was to win today,
Overeem
and Kane. If Kane wins and history dictates that when Kane loses and then comes back against Junior dos Santos, he absolutely dominated him. I'm not saying it's going to be the same, but if Kane was to win that title, they've got three championships. They're just those two camps, and they're two camps as well that as I said before, they're the two camps that I've known in UFC. I've heard of all the others, but these two are the ones that I probably heard of right from the beginning.
Particularly Jackson Wink.
Yeah.
Rashad was there a long time, and GSP was there before.
Yeah.
I've had a lot of people down there. But that was the first one I heard. I remember in a bookshop in London, this is about 5 years ago, picking up a book, and it was Greg Jackson's, like, How to Train MMA. It was just this massive encyclopedia of all the techniques and stuff.
And it was that one, and exactly what you said, Rashad Evans and GSP were there, and then over at AKA, it was Josh Koscheck and John Fitch were at AKA. I don't think they are anymore, but I remember those two camps, so it'd be quite interesting. But again, there's a lot that needs to happen. So if we're talking about today's events, we can do predictions on today's main cards.
Yeah, there's nothing else Holloway thingy.
I wasn't trying to jump the gun. I was just thinking about it.
There's nothing surprising about that. We both predicted that one.
Damian Maia actually, Gunnar Nelson, I watched that fight again. I really enjoyed watching that fight.
Yeah, it's fun, isn't it? Seeing someone that. I mean, I usually don't like one-sided contests, but just to see how jiu-jitsu can be so effective and just neutralising and how you just can't do fuck all about it.
Gunnar is good at jiu-jitsu, and I wonder how that helps Connor in the... We were talking about Edgar fight earlier, how Gunnar and jiu-jitsu helps Connor when he gets taken down.
Yeah. It's 100%. Plus, you know, this is a long time down the road, but obviously they're kind of linked with Ryan Hall now. So if he was to ever fight Tony Ferguson, it'd be like first thing we'd be doing was surely be calling Ryan Hall in.
What's quite interesting actually is I've heard so many of these fighters this week, lightweight especially. I mean, that lightweight division is quite stacked. So you've got Pettis and Alvarez.
Cerrone, Dos Anjos, Connor to come in, Khabib on the sideline, Ferguson.
Enough. Michael Johnson says he wants a title fight. He's the last person to beat Tony Ferguson.
Yeah, and on top of that, like, he lost his last fight, but fucking kidding me, that was the worst decision. So you've got eight people. If you made any of those eight the title fight, it's like, fair enough.
But what makes me laugh is that you've got Tony Ferguson, who arguably has won not eight straight. You've got Michael Johnson, who was the last person to beat Tony Ferguson. If he can get a victory over Diaz today, which I think he'll win, he's got that Diaz to his name. And you've got all these guys saying, I think I deserve a title shot. And then what you've actually got is, deep down, they all know that Connor's just going to go up to that weight class. Because Dana's already pretty much said, and so's Lorenzo, if Connor wants that fight, he's got it. So you've got all these guys sitting there being like, well, I'm next. And actually, Connor's just going to jump the line.
That's why. That's another good reason why I think he should fight Frankie, because he does that and then they can kind of fight each other eliminates him.
But that's what he said, didn't he? He said, I go up to lightweight in April and let in it, because you've got Aldo who wants a rematch, you've got Edgar who probably deserves a title fight, and you've got Max Holloway who's won eight in a row. He goes, let a contender emerge in featherweight, I'll win the title, I'll come back down, defeat that guy, and whilst I'm doing that, let a contender emerge at lightweight, which will be either... Because I wouldn't mind the winner of Pettis, Alvarez fighting Ferguson. I think Ferguson needs one more top two or top three fight, a Cerrone or Pettis.
Well, he's supposed to fight Khabib, wasn't he?
Yeah, or Khabib. But that wasn't his fault. So I mean, that's not his fault. He's beating people in front of him. The Barboza one, which people forget, was even though he did great in that, he did kick him in the face in the first round. And Tony Ferguson, Edson Barboza, really kicked him in the face. Barboza could have easily turned around.
To anyone.
Yeah, but Barboza could have turned around and said, I can't continue.
Yeah.
And he could, to his credit, he continued. I just think I would like to see Tony Ferguson beat someone in the top two or three.
Yeah. It swings. The other thing you consider, not considering is, what if they back, like, fight to a draw today, or it's really close? Like, you know, they would probably have to go again.
It depends how close it is.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. But if it's split decision or something and no one's really in agreement, it depends how it pans out.
My only issue with some of the champions at the moment, and this is no, I'm not calling anyone out, I like the likes of Holly Holm, I like the likes of Connor, I quite like Demetrius Johnson as well. Some of them, I don't like Vadum, because some of them now, when they win a title, kind of just say, oh, actually, I don't want it. Vadum is like, I already want 4 or 5 months off. Now, he fought in November last year, won the interim title, and then fought in June, and then he was like, actually, I don't want to fight again, I want a few months off.
Yeah.
That really annoys me, because it really, I mean, he's now fighting,
puts the belt on a shelf.
Yeah, he's now fought 3 times in 14 months. But that's why I like people.
It's more
than Kane, yeah. But that's why I like champions like... Oh, that's why I want Cerrone to win, because Cerrone...
Defend it every week.
Yeah, he would. He would say... Oh, he said the toughest thing about this is waiting for this fight, because I think his last fight was in April or something.
And even then, he's had 4 this year or something. I read after he beat Henderson, someone put, like, based on it so far this year, like, Cerrone's due to fight 42 times this year, and it wasn't a joke. Like, they calculated it.
Well, no, he fought Benson, didn't he, quite quickly after.
Miles Jury.
Yeah, and I just thought, like, he said that he just didn't like that big, long layoff, because Dos Anjos, I know, fair enough, Dos Anjos is injured, and I know you've got to try and squeeze it in, but there are some champions, Holly Holm doesn't want to sit on the shelf, she wants to keep fighting. Some champions want to fight, and other champions, like, the thing about Vadum annoying me, Vadum was like, I don't really want to fight again this year, I want to wait until, and I just thought, alright, you've put yourself in a good position as champion, but you've still got some, you know, you're doing this for the fans. The fans are the ones paying, making sure you got this money. Like, most people want to put the title on the line, especially at his age. Like, he's not getting any younger. They'd want to make as much money. Whereas I think Cerrone would be like, alright, Cerrone loves money. Cerrone would like, give me a fight in the end of January, now that I've won the title. Because he seems to stay fresh. That's a bit like what Connor's like. Connor would like, jump in. Holly Holmes, another one. I imagine Demetrius Johnson probably wouldn't mind fighting more often, but he just hasn't got many contenders to fight. And then there were other champions, like, alright, DC's had he's had 3 fights this year, quite tough ones as well, so I'll probably give him the benefit of the doubt. Not AJ, but
Jones, Johnson and Gustafson.
But what I mean, it took the Gustafson one probably took quite a bit out of him.
Yeah.
But I don't want to, when a fighter says I want to take time off,
you say not AJ, but that punch.
Well, to be fair, I'll give DC credit. He's had 3 fights this year, all title fights. So I'll give him a little bit of credit. I want to see champions that want to defend their title. So I like Frankie Edgar, because I know Frankie would want to fight. Frankie doesn't fight enough at the moment. I think that probably frustrates him. Well, before this fight, his last fight was against Faber. And when was that? March time or May?
Yeah,
it's just such a long layoff. I like fighters that want to stay active. And you see him fighting every 3 or 4 months.
Yeah.
So that's why I want Cerrone to win. Nothing against RDA. I know he had an injury, but I think Cerrone would say, I'll defend my title. We'd probably see a lightweight fight if Cerrone was champion every 3 or 4 months next year. Whereas I think if it's RDA, we might see it every maybe twice, if that.
Yeah. I mean, say that though, but RDA fought 3 times in 2 months last year.
Who was that? Was that the...
He fought the mighty Jason High. He lost to Khabib. And then he beat someone.
Wasn't it Khabib first? Did he lose to Khabib, then beat Jason High?
And then he beats... And then might have been Henderson. Yeah, then it might have been Henderson. And it was 3 times in seven weeks or something like that. And I think... He fought Pettis in eight.
We talked about this one. We spoke about this event. Something happened when this event was on for you. We spoke about this before. There was something. There's something you remember. You said, "Oh, there's a UFC event on," and I remember this happening. And it turned out it was that one, because there was a women's. It was Johanna when she won the title. Hannah's another one. She defended it. I mean, she's already had three title fights last year.
Yeah.
Well, won the title and defended it twice.
But, yeah. And the other thing is, similar to the way Conor beat Chad, apparently RDA's leg was hanging off as well when he beat Pettis. He had no lean ligament or something.
Is that where he had knee surgery? Oh, who had... Oh, it was... Pettis, another one I can't. He was off for a bit, won the title, was off for a bit longer, then defended it twice, I think. He beat Melendez. Oh no, he won it.
Defended it and then lost.
Yeah, he beat Melendez and he fought quite straight out. He fought about 2 months after, and then he's been out ever since with a elbow injury.
Yeah.
And he was supposed to fight, I think, in June or July. Maybe some people are just prone to injury.
It is that, and you've got the training that they do. The other thing that they were saying about RDA on that podcast is pretty much you've obviously got to get as fit as possible to fight, and when you get that fit, your body's got about 2 weeks before it just starts falling to bits because you're pushing it to the limit. So to time that, so you are doing that, it's difficult. And even this guy Nick Kirsten, who's one of the best strength conditioning guys about, I see him on Instagram, I think he's like at Speed of Sport, I think, and he works with Ellenberger and Machida, and he works with Vadum and Dos Anjos, and a lot of people in the LA area, and even they got it wrong with RDA. So I mean, maybe it might not be
RDA. Yeah, RDA trains, I think, with Ellenberger, doesn't he? I saw a clip of Ellenberger doing some cardio and weight training.
Speed of Sport, Nick Kirsten. That podcast, honestly, check it out. It's about 6 months old now, but it's fascinating. Like,
well, going off topic, I really enjoyed the podcast of Lance Armstrong.
Yeah, that was good.
And I really want to share that. I've got a friend, and I know the minute I share it, he'll jump in because he hates Lance Armstrong. He's always like, "Put it cheap." The interesting thing, what I liked about what Lance said, just going a bit off topic, is how much he did for the sport, even though. Cheating, how much attention he brought to the sport, because not many people watched it before.
Yeah.
How much he's done for other businesses, and he mentioned about my dad's got a Trek bike, got nicked actually, but that's another funny story. But loves Trek, and he said that Trek were doing like 100 or something million,
and they went to like billions.
And you think like how much he did, and like he said, it wasn't. I don't think he lied. He probably did lie for selfish reasons. He did lie for selfish reasons, but he also lied to protect a lot of people, a lot of sport, a lot of sponsorship. Like, a lot of stuff, I think it's easy to say he's a liar. I was like, yeah, but think about what he lied for. Like, he wasn't... Him lying just wasn't protecting himself.
He can't not lie.
Yeah. But him lying wasn't just him protecting himself, saying that. He was also protecting a lot of his friends, a lot of his family, the whole sport he was trying to protect.
Yeah.
Sponsors.
Someone said to me, I played a tennis match years back, and this guy's brother was a cyclist, real keen cyclist, and he got really good.
Uh-oh.
And yeah, he's in trouble now. This guy was, he was saying his brother could have gone pro, and he got to the point where he was that good. It's like, right. And he got kind of offers to go pro, and he basically chose not to just because he didn't want to take all the drugs. Like, that was a thing. And I was like, oh, that's it. Like, I was about 20 or something at the time. Like, are they on drugs, are they? And he's like, he said, every professional cyclist on drugs. And Lance said, when they said when they traced it back, they gave it to number 18, and Lance was like, that's being generous.
Yeah.
It's a fascinating podcast to listen to. Like, obviously a bit off topic, but it just tells you about, makes you realise about drugs and sport.
Have you read his book?
No, I've actually got one of them. Bought my dad years back. Which one? He's got a few, hasn't he?
I think it might have been his first one. I want to read it because someone told me just read it, and I was like, "Yeah, do you not worry about it? He's a cheat." And she was like, "Look, if he was the best of everyone who was cheating, like he was still the best."
And he had cancer and won it seven times. He like won the best once. He won it seven times, and he had to battle back from cancer before he did that.
And actually, I still think he's put the sport on the map.
Yeah,
you can criticize him all you want, but people wouldn't be following Bradley Wiggins and who's the most recent one who won
it? Froome.
Chris Froome. He helped.
You are getting better times than him, anyway. Just shows how training is how far it's come.
Yeah, that went a bit off topic there. But
No, it's definitely a valid thing. My mate Dave said he gets all the stick for it, but is it right? I mean, one of the things was he just came across as a dick and he was suing people, calling him a liar, and are they actually right? But he took all the brunt, but the whole thing is, it's not black and white. I'm not saying he's the best person in the world, but he's not the worst. There's reasons for it, and yeah, everybody check that one out with Lance Armstrong, and you'll learn a lot about drugs and sport.
I tell you what, one of the things I love about that one, and it's something we discussed before, is Jeff Nowitzki.
Yeah,
is on Joe Rogan's podcast, and he's the one who I think he's doing.
Yeah, he was on the podcast as well.
He was on a podcast.
He was on Joe Rogan's podcast,
but not the one with Lance Armstrong.
No, he wanted to be.
Yeah, he wanted. Yeah.
He was on Rogan about 2-3 months ago.
Yeah. That's the one you told me about. And he's the one who's doing all this stuff for UFC,
yeah.
Drug testing and drugs in UFC. And Lance just makes a good point. I didn't realise how, like, this guy was the one who was, like, trying to chase it down. And to be honest, like, the reason they probably went for Lance is because he was such a big name, right? They said he took a lot of the brunt of it. No one, if I told you, could you name me the other cyclist who were also done for drugs?
Jan Ulrich.
I mean, I wouldn't be able to name one, but...
Yeah.
But yeah, it kind of goes back because I know that
Robbie McEwen,
Jeff Nowitzki wanted to be on the podcast with Lance. He asked to be on it with him.
Yeah,
but he's obviously the one who's trying to now get to the clean up the sport in UFC, and it'll be interesting to see how that goes.
Tate Fletcher, who like my photo, who's got another really good podcast called Pirate Life, actually. Really like that. It's quite inspirational. Got some good ideas in that. He was saying it was a podcast of Cowboy actually, and he said he kind of gets it, but he said like this. He said with this Nowitzki, he's kind of the kid who never got picked for any school teams, and so he's going after all the ones who did. but Vitor Belfort permanently damaged Michael Bisping's eye, and a big part of that is because he was able to take drugs to improve himself and get better.
But this is the thing. This is why, and this was on this podcast. Drugs in UFC is, in my opinion, is different to drugs in cycling, because in cycling you're trying to better yourself. Yes, you're cheating sponsors and you're cheating the people you're racing against, blah blah.
Yeah.
But in UFC. Or in MMA or boxing or any sport, if you're on something, you're not just trying to bet yourself, you're also causing damage to your opponent. And I think it's actually more of a health risk than it is. I mean, it's a health risk personally. When Lance Armstrong did it, it's a health risk to him personally.
It depends. The thing is, humans, they'll always abuse the substances. You can take performance enhancing drugs safely, because
which you're going to tell me about after the podcast, just to help me.
But if you take testosterone replacement therapy, it's synthetic testosterone, but your body produces testosterone anyway. So you're just putting in something that your body already produces, and they're already developing some more natural one. Like I think they grow it from the yams or something, and they're growing it from something else now. People are going to take that, and then it's going to take like oxycycline, doxycycline, and it's going to be like, what? I can't even say that, I can't spell it, and it's got full of all these chemicals. So there'll be someone who takes something like that, but because it's so grey, it's like kind of, it's almost like a, do you let them do everything, or do you really clamp down on it? And the UFC at the moment are going down on it.
Well, they need to, don't they? It's too much of a... They're trying to do everything they can to legitimise the sport.
It's hard. Because there's ways around it still. That just because someone passes a drugs test does not mean they're clean. It means they know exactly what they're taking and how long it takes to cycle and how long it takes to get out of the system.
But it's not going to be something they're going to clean up over a night or over a month. It's going to take a long time for them to get around it.
I just feel sorry for Aldo, because obviously he unfortunately was late for his test, and then how unfortunate just to spill the piss that you've given. So unlucky, isn't it? I just feel sorry for him.
I mean, that was something that was a strange one. I mean, we spoke about that at the time. I didn't realise he spilled it until it came out recently. That's
that Brian Ortega looks good, by the way. And Tubinov is the one who knocked out
Jobon. Getting quick turnaround. That's quite a good card as well. But if top, yeah, that's not bad.
The thing is, I'll
that top fight,
yeah, it is a good card, but you look at you start comparing everything to last week and even this week in some respects, and you're like, oh, it's a bit of a shitty card.
Well, I'll tell you, the Boston card I think is really good. Yeah, I mean, the top two fights. I quite
that's
like what they're doing.
Conor was on last year, wasn't it? You must do a Sunday night as well. It must be an annual thing. I don't know. Andre,
well, I wonder if it's because something happens on a Boston on the Monday.
Yeah.
I didn't realise it was a Sunday night. Fuck. That'd be alright. What's that, Saturday daytime here in Sydney? Monday daytime.
Monday daytime. I'll be in Hawaii.
I work late Monday, but I don't know if I'll be available for that. That'd be annoying.
Yeah, because I remember last year, because McGregor was on it last year, and I've got, Conor was fighting, and Scruffy was just like, absolutely rammed. And then I was saying, what was it like? And she said, you know, it was Monday, so I'm guessing no one went. I was like, oh, yeah, shit.
I'm trying to think. I'm pretty sure I stayed up for that Conor fight last year. I just woke up for it. I'm trying to think what. Oh, yeah, I must have woken up for it and gone into work later that day. Because the time difference, I don't know if it was too bad for the UK. I watched it in the UK.
In the UK, I record them. This is very exciting for everyone. I record them and then just get up and don't check any internet and just watch it. Here, it's convenient as fuck, actually. Just be able to get up on a Sunday and watch it.
It's just
like
something
super funny.
Yeah, that's what I say. I almost say it's just sort of flipped with that with football, because I now wake up. Normally on a Sunday, I'll get up in the morning, I might go to the gym, and then I'll be like stuck in front of the TV for like 4 hours watching double Super Sundays, whereas now I'm stuck in front of a packed out casino.
Yeah.
Just to give people an update at home, we've now had, I think, about an extra 3 people join us since the beginning.
Yeah.
This place last week, we couldn't barely start, yeah. And now it's just, and I don't even know if, I'm looking around, I don't even know if half people understand what's going on.
Yeah. I think it's the people who do turn up to watch UFC, like they know about, because if you're into UFC, you're not, apart from last week, obviously, casual fans, like, those people who are into it kind of watch
well. What I thought might be on here as well, and I haven't actually looked at it yet, I'll look at it now, is the boxing, because it was Andy Lee versus Billy Saunders.
Oh, were they fighting each other, were they? Billy Joe Saunders?
Billy Joe, yeah, fighting now, I think.
I thought, is it?
I was hoping it was going to be on the same. Well, what time is it? It's 11:30, they probably finished.
Yeah, I thought Andy Lee had won.
Do you know that, or are you?
No, actually. Tony Jeffries put it on Twitter or something.
Well, I've got the results here.
Who won?
Because
Billy Joe was undefeated before this fight.
I will tell you, judging by it looks like it might have been Billy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Billy Joe Saunders scores majority decision victory over Andy Lee, captures WBO middleweight title.
Yeah.
It apparently floored him twice in one of the rounds. Andy Lee, I think, trains with Adam Booth, seems to be losing all his. George Groves said he abandoned him this week.
He what?
George Groves. Well, George Groves and David Haye both used to train with Adam Booth. They're both now signed up to Shane McGuigan.
Oh, right.
So George Groves announced last week he's now training with Shane because he's split with Paddy Fitzpatrick.
Yeah.
And he kind of just spoke out about what happened between him and Adam Booth. Because he split with Booth like 4 or 5 weeks before the first call.
Yeah.
And everyone kept saying, is it a master plan? Is Adam Booth going to come out in his corner? And they hugged afterwards, but he said this week that they always used to have a little falling out, and then they just fell out this time, and apparently said Adam Booth just abandoned him and said, I'm not going to be in your corner for this fight. I'm not sure how true. I mean, that's just George Groves' side of the story, but. And I wondered if David Haye and Adam Booth fell out, because David Haye picked a new trainer, but apparently they're still friends. He just said that he. I quite like Adam Booth. I thought he was quite a good. I always enjoyed listening to him talk and breaking down a fight, but he seems to have lost his biggest two, and then Andy Lee was his title holder, and he just lost.
The biggest, I'm not sure it was the biggest thing he did, but when he masterminded George Groves to beat James the Gale, yeah. Which it looks even more impressive. I mean, not that George Groves is bad, but James DeGale's not lost since then, and he's won a world title, defended it, and beat two big names. And
I think that and the Valuev fight. Valuev wasn't a great boxer, he was just huge, yeah. But David Hay.
When he beat James DeGale, I was like, shit, David Hay's going to beat Klitschko, I'm going to Germany.
Yeah.
Didn't work out.
I remember that Valuev fight. I look back on that fight and I think Valuev was massive. Not the one when he won the title, how big that guy was.
Yeah.
He couldn't box, he was just like.
Well, that was the thing. I mean, that's slightly unfair. Like, he was okay, but the big thing was his height.
Yeah.
And it's like, how do you go about that?
When David Hay hit him and he stumbled.
Yeah. But he broke his hand in the first round, Hay did. He said his head was just a rock. Yeah. Alright, should we. Yeah, we'll get our predictions off, I guess, and see.
So should we start with the main event on the prelims, which is Miles Jury,
yeah,
Charles Oliveira?
Yeah.
Who wants to go first?
I don't mind, I can go first. That's a tough one to call, though. It's Miles Jury, first time at 145, and Oliveira's missed weight, but he's...
I'm going to go Miles Jury.
I was thinking that. He's only lost to Cerrone.
He's got a new gym as well. He's now with Power MMA, Bader and Aaron Sims. I think he was with, I'm not sure he was with before. Was he with ATT before? Like two or three of them moved down to Power MMA. So I wonder how much that's going to impact. But I'm going with Miles Jury.
Okay.
You can still go with him. You don't have to.
I know, but I'm just trying to. Obviously, Oliveira's jiu-jitsu is pretty slick.
With Oliveira is that we didn't really see him in his last fight because it's Max Holloway. It kind of just ended.
Yeah, he's on the shoulder. I'm surprised he's back so quick, actually. I think Strike's going to be too much for him. And I don't think that Jory will try and get it to the floor, and I don't think Oliveira will get him to the floor, because Oliveira, when he got Cowboy to the floor, was just a disaster for him, because Cowboy was too much. So I'm going to go with Jory. So who's the next one?
It's the women's fight. I can't remember that.
I'm going to go with Randa Markos, based on the fact that she seems to have a lot of hype behind her, and she tweets a lot, and that's it.
Isn't it the Polish woman who's in there as well there? I'm trying to think who the fight is. It was... I'm going to go with the Polish. I can't say her name. No one can say her name on Fox Sports, but she's Polish. She's obviously, I think she's the highest ranked fighter outside of the UFC in that women's division.
Oh, okay.
And, well, Johanna's Polish, so if that's anything to go by, she's going to...
Both with some technical...
I can't remember her name now, but... I remember they kept saying, I was watching a Fox Sports show, and Brian Stan kept trying to ask Daniel Cormier to say her name, and he just couldn't. But let's just put it this way, I'm going against you on that one.
Okay.
And then we've got...
Michael Johnson, Nate Diaz, is it? Michael Johnson.
Yeah, I think Michael Johnson would just be too...
I think he's looked really good, even in his loss, I thought he won that, and he's won... If I count that as a win, almost, so that's, what, 6 or 7 or 8?
I actually think he's going to stand with Diaz for the first two rounds.
He's not wrestled for a long time. Like, he's a stand-up fighter.
But I think he will wrestle him.
That's why I worry, not worry, but that's what I think he'll do against Conor. And if he shouldn't do that, if that fight ever happened, I think
you'll see him go back to wrestling. I think he'll stand with Diaz for the first two rounds, and then in the third round, he'll just try and wrestle him and try and win that round. I don't think he'll finish Diaz. You don't really see Diaz get finished much.
I don't know, because he stood up with Edson Barbosa for the three. He went, and he's a good striker, and stood up for that. Oh, wow. Next one is Overeem versus Junior Dos Santos.
Oh, this is a difficult one because I wanted to go with Junior Dos Santos. I just thought his power might finish Overeem. I've seen Overeem get
his chinny.
Yeah, but then he did.
Nelson
caught
him at the end of that. Nelson decided to take him down.
I'm actually going to go with Alistair Overeem on this one.
going to referee as well.
Are you?
Yeah. I mean, it's difficult because you don't know what versions of Dos Santos and Overeem are going to turn out. How much has Dos Santos got left after the Stipe and the Kane fights?
It's a boxer as well, isn't he? But he's a good MMA boxer. But I don't know if Overeem's got slightly more. Is just more versatile. Whether or not he'll go for some takedowns. Whether or not Jackson. I always think now with Jackson Wink, what kind of game plan they've got. So I don't know. I'm going towards Overeem in this fight, and I kind of want Overeem to win just to make the heavyweight division slightly more. I think if Junior Dos Santos wins and then Kane wins, just like, oh well, you can't make that fight again. Whereas. So I'm going with Overeem on that one.
I think he's just been a bit more active, and he's certainly, Rafael took him out, Nelson caught him, I think Travis Brown caught him, Bigfoot Silver caught him, like, you can catch him. So Junior's definitely got that chance, but obviously Overeem should know that as well, and they should know that, so they should train to avoid it. And
yeah.
I like you said, the camp factor, training camp. you'd expect them to try and work around that and avoid what Junior's got to offer. And I don't know what version of themselves are going to turn out, but yeah, I'm going for that. And then main event,
I'm going Cerrone.
I'm going again. It depends what version of RDA comes out, but I'm going RDA. I think he looked unbelievable against Pettis. Like, wasn't just he just caught him or edged him in rounds. He just completely mauled another guy that Dana. See, there's a big curse going around. If Dana calls you the pound for pound best fighter in the world, start getting worried.
I noticed he hasn't said that about Conor yet. He hasn't said Conor's the pound.
He doesn't want to curse him. He cursed Barão, Aldo, Pettis, someone else, I'm sure.
Ronda. The only one he hasn't cursed is Demetrius Johnson.
Oh, he said that. Yes. Oh, he said it, but. Yeah, he's not okay. Yeah,
Demetrius Johnson. I don't know. I think Cerrone, he'll learn from their last fight. I mean, his last defeat was against Dos Anjos. I think they both got better.
Yeah,
I think he's been slightly more well up until this injury. He was up until this break. Sorry, he was quite active. He was, you know, guys. I think a lot of his fights were quite close. Benson Henderson fight was a close fight, but. I think Cerrone's going to come extremely prepared, and I think there isn't just a title on the line here, there's millions of dollars on the line, because the winner of this will get to fight Conor and get to be involved with that, and that'll be fun. And I think I kind of want to see Cerrone Conor.
I think
they'll have more fun.
Yeah, I think that might be a factor for Cerrone. I don't think that'd be a factor for Dos Anjos. Like, I'm not saying he doesn't want money, but he just seems more of a
purist. Night. I had a vision that RDA wins, and then he makes a joke afterwards when they say, "What's next for you?" And he makes a joke saying it's, because that would make me laugh.
It goes,
"I'm going to call home. I'm going to call my wife and say, get your red panties on because Conor's coming to lightweight."
That'd be funny. That's what he should say. But he's. I don't think he will. If supports again.
I think Cerrone beats him. I think Cerrone. I think it'll be on points. And I think Cerrone. I would like. I don't know. Actually, now that you've been saying about RDA and his, I guess, strength and conditioning,
you listen to that and you see things in a whole new light.
Because a lot of people were saying that Cerrone lost the last fight but won the third round, and had it been a fourth and fifth round, he might have gone on to dominate those ones. It's a different RDA now. He's obviously changed trainers. I don't know. I think. What?
Carry on after. Oh. He's obviously changed. Different RDA now. Interpret that how you will.
I'm sticking with Cerrone.
Yeah. I just think that RDA that beat Pettis, who's traditionally a striker, I just don't see anyone beating that particular RDA if that guy turns up. But I mean, I think Cerrone's obviously, he's great on the ground, he's not going to be a sitting duck, and he's won his last eight, and he's just not scared, he's relaxed, he's a confident dude. So yeah, I think he will I think he definitely could win, but I just think RDA. I just think Cerrone's more of an old school mentality, like work hard, train hard, kind of
drink beer.
Whereas when he comes, I think he might slip up when it comes to someone who's got it all down to a T, which it appears like Dos Anjos has. Like, for instance, Benson's kind of got it all down to a T, and I think that Benson actually beat him in their fight, which I didn't object to, because Benson's had a fucking hatful of lucky decisions, and one of those was against Cerrone in the first one, and Benson even said, like, look, I got the first one, so you get this one. Like, it's not. But I think when Cerrone comes against someone who's just got it down to a T and is well prepared and just got it all scientific.
Yeah, but it's also a different era now in the UFC, and we'll see what impact that has on both fighters. A lot's changed since RDA last fought in March.
Yeah,
we'll see what impact
it's a good fight. It's not a fight where I look at it and go, oh, okay, I know who's going to win that. The last few weeks they've made some pretty compelling matchups. I think out of all the fights we've just spoke about, out of all the fights we talked about last week, I'd say the most dead cert was the Holloway one. That's the one I thought, that was the one I was most confident on. And the next one I'm most confident on is the Michael Johnson one. And I think they, out of all the ones we've talked about over the last two episodes, they're the two that I'd put more money on than anything. And then the rest of them are kind of all up in the air as such, I'd say.
Yeah, the only other fight I was confident on last week, which wasn't the main card, would have been, no, I wasn't going to say Connor. But I did say Connor would, even I didn't bet Connor to win in 13 seconds. It would have been UI Faber.
Yeah,
and even then he was pushed.
Yeah.
And I did look at that and I did think he looked like he was quite gassed. If he gets that gassed against a TJ or Dominic, or a TJ especially, I don't. He'd have to work on a 5-rounder, because I'm not sure he punched himself out.
He didn't gas against Edgar though.
No. He punched himself out, I think, trying to finish Frankie, and fair play to Frankie Sands, it says, not Edgar.
Definition of madness is repeating the same thing and expecting different results. And Edgar is definitely someone who's a smart guy, so I just don't see him making the same mistake where he'll just get trained the same way, and so he will be gassed in that situation.
I think Faber.
Yeah. Did I say Edgar?
Edgar, yeah.
So yeah. He's a smart dude, he's not gonna fall for the same mistake as he did last time. But then, having said that, I thought all these guys were highly calculated, and maybe they are, but what appeared to be a lack of preparation for Aldo and the spinning kick from Wyman, whether it be just the pressure or the moment or whatever, they're two mistakes I didn't expect so-called dominant champions to make. So I think maybe Uriah will make the same mistake.
And so now I'm really looking forward to seeing Dominic Cruz and TJ fight. I think that's probably the fight I'm looking forward to most in January. Well, actually, I'm looking forward to Condit Lawler for the war, because I think that'll be an absolute war. But I'm looking forward to TJ Dominic. I just want to see Dominic. I haven't seen enough of Dominic since I've been into the UFC. I think I've seen him fight 3 times, and he's been out for most of it. So I'm really looking forward to seeing that. I really enjoy watching TJ.
Yeah,
he's just an entertaining fight, even though he's a bit of a snake. It's an entertaining fight.
Oh, I don't know. You don't know what's going on. You don't know.
He was happy sitting in that tough house with.
Yeah, but he made a good point where he said, when he was on Ariel Helwani's show, is he was saying that he was like, Raya should be quiet, like it's a situation that he created. It's a rift between him and Dwayne, and it's all a bit of he said this, she said that. It's you don't really know what's gone on, and if it is Uriah who's created that situation, why should TJ stick with him? Why should TJ lose his good trainer just because Uriah's created some situation? But if it's Dwayne, if it's all Dwayne who's created it, then snake in the grass.
I didn't think it was a case of that was issued. Like he had been training with Dwayne and Uriah for his last 2 fights. He's splitting his time.
It's not ideal.
He's joined a new team. There was something else that I was thinking about the other day. Oh, it was the Cody. Cody or Kobe? Cody No Love.
Yeah.
And I said to you last week that I for some reason he just came to my mind because I see him in a tough house. And I was like, he hasn't been given a fight yet. And his last fight was at 189. And now he's got
quite a big fight,
Lineker.
Lineker, yeah.
which I think is quite a big one, because he asked for a top 10 or top 15 guy.
Yeah.
And he's got one.
Yeah.
Another one that Team Alpha Male need to rely on. He's undefeated so far, and he's probably there. The rest of Team Alpha Male seems to be going downhill. Castillo, Palmer, Mendez, and Rose. Rose and Paige have all lost in the last week.
Did you say favourite?
No, Palmer, Mendez, Castillo,
yeah,
and Paige.
Yeah, I mean, they're all fighting good people. You know, it can happen. When you get to that level, it becomes a game of inches.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Should we end this?
Yeah, let's enjoy the rest of those cards.
Alright, Adubs16 on Twitter.
At Adubs16 on Twitter and at Adubs10 on Instagram. I'm going to change that, I'm going to make it easier.
Yeah.
Adubs16.
It makes sense. And still, I'm giving away these beautiful wristbands that say #RJKWorldTour. All you got to do is write an iTunes review. It takes 2 minutes. Go onto iTunes, type in #RJKWorldTour, click on the podcast, click on rates and reviews, give me a rating, give me a quick review, a couple of sentences. Really helps me out, really helps the show out. And yeah, I'll send you a wristband once you've done that. Hit me up on social media at RJKWorldTour. Twitter and Instagram. See, I've got the same common sense. Although I differ on Facebook, it's RJK World Tour Podcast with no hashtag at the front.
Alright,
it's second edition of our UFC talk. Probably make this more of a regular thing, checking.
Probably do one over Christmas, won't we, for the Condit Lawler.
Yeah, why not? Alright, so we'll do one for Condit versus Lawler, UFC 195, like a pre-show kind of thing. Alright guys, see you later.